I got up here and the first thing I said was, you have won $1 million. Or the first thing I said was, you need to go out to the parking lot because your car is on fire. Or if I said, you need to go in the foyer because Mike Tyson is waiting to fight you. There's a question that I think of any of those statements that you would want answered. The number one question that you would want answered in any of those questions is, who is you? Who is it who's won $1 million? Is it me? Who is it whose car is on fire? Is it me? Who is it that Mike Tyson wants to fight? Hopefully it's Eddie. I don't know who it is. And so when the you is used, we've got to know who it is who's being talked about. Now we're in Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5 is our text, not 13 to 16 is our text. So we're going to get some material around that. But Matthew 5, 13 to 16 is one of the most well-known passages in the Bible. And it says this, Matthew 5 and verse 13. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has become tasteless, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Jesus says in this verse, this passage, that you are what? What are you? It's the first thing that you are. You are the salt of the earth. And he says that you are the light of the world. The question is, who is you? Who is he talking about? Who is the salt of the earth? Who is the light of the world? Everybody? Every person? Every individual? Everybody in the world? A certain group of individuals? Only certain people? If a certain people, who are those people? And so we have to answer the question, who is he talking to? So to do that, as usual, we want to get some context, and I would call your attention to a couple of verses, I think, that due to their positioning, usually get completely ignored in interpreting the passage. Very, very often in interpreting a passage, a lot of people will just blow right past the opening verses and not make the connection. This happens in Revelation all the time. Right? Well, what is the timing of the book of Revelation? Well, he tells us. Where does he tell us? In the beginning, he says, the time is near. These things will happen soon. But people get all jacked up on Revelation because they what? They blow past the beginning. And that happens here. So if we're to ask the question, who's you? I think we need to go back to the very start and do a connection, I think, that is often missed. Matthew 5, 1, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on the mountain, and after he had sat down, notice who came to him. His disciples came to him. He opened his mouth and began to teach who? Them. When Jesus was on the mountain, giving the Sermon on the Mount, he was not primarily teaching the crowds. He was not primarily talking to unbelievers. Now, they were there, and we know that they were listening. And we know that they were listening because at the very end of the Sermon on the Mount, it says, the crowds were amazed and said, we never heard anybody like this. But that's not who Jesus was talking to. When Jesus was talking in the Sermon on the Mount, and when he was saying in 13 and 14, you, he was talking to his disciples. Well, what makes a disciple of Jesus? What is it about a person that makes them identifiable as a disciple of Jesus? More to the point for our sermon this morning, what is it about a person that makes them a believer that God can use? Because what Jesus is talking about in Matthew 5, 13 to 16 is being a believer that God can use. Being a believer who has an impact. Being a believer who does what salt does. We'll talk about that. Being a believer who does what light does. We'll talk about that. But he's talking about being a believer that God can use. Well, what makes that? Well, it would be great if between the identification of the disciples in verse 2 and the description in 13, it would be great if Jesus gave us a description of a believer that God can use. And he does. What do we call it? The Beatitudes. The Beatitudes composes a description, or is a description, of the kind of person that God can use to be salt and light. So before we talk about being salt and light, we have to talk about what does a person need to be. Now what I've done for our purposes here is to sort of summarize the Beatitudes, to put them in language that we would normally use, because we don't talk about very often. How often have you ever heard somebody say, I don't know Rod. Tell me about Rod. Well, I'll tell you about Rod. Rod is poor in spirit. Nobody ever said, we don't talk that way. Right? Even for the word that's translated either meek or gentle, we don't even have a word in English that very well translates that word. That takes a whole sentence to translate that word. So what I wanted to do this morning in describing a believer that God can use is to sort of summarize, put some together, reword some, hopefully correctly, what Jesus says in the Beatitudes. First of all, to be a believer that God can use, you must be humble. You must be humble. Now, what you're going to see as we go through this description is the believer who is a Beatitudes believer is going to stand out, I was going to say like a sore thumb, but that's not in a good way, who's going to stand out a lot from the world. The believer who's doing what the Beatitudes say, when we're through with this description, you will look at that and say, man, people in the world aren't like that. Being a Christian is really going to be different. You're going to be humble. Most people are not humble. Most people are not humble. Now, most people may not come off as braggadocious or arrogant or cocky. A lot of people may not come off that way. But do most people believe that they are incapable of figuring things out and that they must submit to a higher power? Absolutely not. Most people say, I got this, I'm going to do it my way. That's not humble. The believer, which is poor in spirit, means humility. The believer says, I don't know what to do. I can't save myself. I can't answer my own question. I'm going to listen to somebody who knows better. That's not the world. Secondly, a person that God can use is going to be a peacemaker, not a drama creator, not a conflict continuer, not a pot stirrer. You know people like that. A lot of people are not happy unless there's something drama going on. And if everything is calm, they're going to swoop in and get something started. Because a lot of people aren't happy unless their things are in an uproar. That's not the believer that God can use. The believer that God can use is peaceful with other people, makes peace with other people, helps other people be at peace, and is not a drama creator for the sake of drama. A person that God can use, and I combine several Beatitudes here, fervently living only for good regardless of consequences, hungering and thirsting for righteousness, even if it means you get persecuted. The believer that God can use says, I'm going to do the right thing. That's all I care about, even if I have to suffer for it. That's not the world. The believer that God can use is kind-hearted toward other people. Blessed are the merciful, kind, loving, gentle, considerate to other people, even when they pull out in front of you and immediately start going slower than the speed limit. Even then, I think. self-control. This is really what the word that's translated meek or gentle, this is really what the word means. He said, wait a minute, I thought there wasn't a word that we could translate. Well, there's a little more to it. But generally speaking, it means self-control. It means power under control. The word means you recognize that you have power that you could use to damage other people, but you're not going to do that. Classic example, Jesus said, I could call legions of angels to rescue me, but I'm not going to do that. Jesus hanging on the cross with spit running down his face, blood running out of the puncture wounds in his wrists and his feet, Jesus hanging on the cross being mocked, and continuing to hang there rather than jumping down off the cross and just wiping everybody out. That's what the word means. You have within your power the ability to damage other people. You have the ability to do harm. When you don't do that, that's self-control. That's what the word means. And God-minded. This is what Jesus means when he says, blessed are those who mourn. Not blessed is that friend of yours who's always in a bad mood and tragedy is always around the corner and they're always moping about. Not that person. That's not what he means. But when Jesus says, blessed are those who mourn, he means blessed are those who weep at what makes God weep. Blessed are those who are made sad by what makes God sad. That's what it means. So this is the believer that God can use. So we're going to go through this again, Lord willing, in a little bit. But I just want you to think about that. Are you humble? Are you willing to say, I don't have the answers, I need help. I can't do this on my own. Is that you? Are you a person who's a peacemaker? Or when you're around, is it like an agitator in a washing machine? Everything's just all jumbled up everywhere. Or are you a peacemaker? When you see people in conflict, do you egg it on? Or do you help it subside? Are you a person who lives only for good regardless of consequences? All I care is about doing good, and if I suffer, I suffer, but I'm going to do the right thing. Is that you? Kind-hearted, merciful toward others, under self or under control, and thinking the way that God thinks. We'll come back to that shortly. But what we're talking about this morning, we begin a new series on Sunday mornings that is inspired by our Sunday morning Bible classes this month, where we're talking about, in particular, mainly the nation of Israel, who was supposed to be God's people. But what? But they were not. The nation of Israel, the northern nation, the 10 tribes, capitaled in Samaria, supposed to be the people of God, but from the very first of 19 kings, gone off the rails. And there were some people who would rise up occasionally and try to influence the nation for good. And how did that work? It typically didn't make a lot of difference. And that's pretty much where we are. And that's what we're going to be talking about this month. And so Jesus, again, our text, Matthew 5, 13 to 16. Jesus says two things in this passage. He says, you are the salt of the earth and you are the light of the world. So let's just break those down. We're just going to sort of camp out right here and drill down on what he's saying and what it means, and then that'll be that. Very, very simple. And, you know, the 2 hours will pass very quickly, I promise. It'll be like we're not even here, I promise. So you are the salt of the earth. What does that mean? If I asked you to explain, if I said to you, we need you to teach a Bible class on what does it mean to be the salt of the earth, what would you say? What would be your thinking about what it means to be the salt of the earth? Well, I think that it means two things. When we think about salt, the nature of salt, the uses of salt, I think two main things are in view. As a believer, you're to be distinctive. As a believer, you're to be distinctive. What does that mean? That means that you are fundamentally different from everything else. What's the Bible word that means that? What's the Bible word that means different from everything else? It's the word holy. You are to be fundamentally different. Salt is very distinctive, right? Salt stands out in taste. Salt stands out from what it's in. You can tell if it has salt, and you can tell if it doesn't. Salt stands out from what it's in. It's different from what it's in. I had a friend that we used to eat with occasionally many, many years ago. And she was health conscious to a fault. And not only did she never use salt, I'm pretty sure that she had perfected a scientific means of removing whatever tiny amount of sodium may have been in something. I have never tasted food so utterly, I tasted it. I've never put food in my mouth so utterly devoid of taste. Everything on the plate, roast, mashed potatoes, green beans, tasted exactly the same. There was no salt in anything. You can tell when salt is... Now, on the other hand, and I think he did this, her son-in-law, when he ordered pepperoni pizza, would salt it. I know that he did it just to get at her. I know he did. But he'd get a pepperoni pizza, and man, he'd salt all over that thing. When salt is in something, you can tell it's there. Salt is different from what it's in, and salt is also different from other things that might be sort of like it. Salt is different from other things that are used to season. You don't taste something that's salty and go, I love cinnamon, because it's different. You don't taste something that has a lot of pepper in it and talk about the salt in it. You don't taste something that's minty and think about the high salt content. Salt is different from things that do what it does. So what's the point? The point is that as a Christian, you are to be different from what you're in. That is the world. You are to be different from the world. You're supposed to be not like the world. That doesn't mean that, well, the world wears jeans, and so I can only wear dress pants or a dress. The world watches TV, so I can't ever watch TV. I'll read, although, the world reads. I can't read anymore. Not that sort of thing. But being different in fundamental, moral, and spiritual ways. We've got to stand out from the world. And we've got to be different from other religions. The trend in the world today among religious people is taking out everything that's distinctive so that everybody who's religious can all be the same thing. And that doesn't work. We've got to be distinctive. Secondly, we've got to be influential. We've got to be influential. Salt influences what it touches. Salt influences what it touches. When you put salt on meat, what happens? Tastes better, but what else happens? When you put salt on meat, it preserves it. When you put salt on ice, what? Melts it. When you put salt on metal and leave it, what happens? It corrodes. Let's think about that. Salt influences nearly, if you have glass and you pour salt on it, nothing will happen. It's not going to affect the glass. But most things, when you put salt in or on it, it influences what it's in contact with. And that's what Jesus is saying about, think about it. After our big snow that we had, the roads were icy. You could get out in your car and you could drive to Walmart on clearer roads because of what? Salt. And you could go to Walmart and you could pick up your country ham, which is made with salt, and you could take it home and you could drink water out of your tap with softened water, softened by salt. But you better be careful, because you don't want to leave your car unwashed too long, because the salt that you drove in is going to corrode the car. Salt influences everything that it touches. Now, it does it in different ways. Sometimes the salt corrodes and sometimes the salt preserves. Sometimes as salt, people are going to react negatively to you, and sometimes they're going to react positively to you, but they will almost always react because you are salt. Salt is influential. If these things are not true, if you are not distinctive. So look at what Jesus says in Matthew 5:13. Look at what Jesus says. You are the salt of the earth, but what? But if the salt has become tasteless. In other words, what? In other words, if you are no longer what? Distinctive. If you are no longer influential, what does he say? If the salt has become tasteless, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. Now, this is one of those cases where we don't want to press an image too far. We don't want to read what Jesus is saying as though he is saying, if you are faithful and become unfaithful, you can't ever be faithful. That's not what he's saying. He doesn't have that in mind. What he's saying is, when salt has lost its taste, it's not good for anything anymore. If you take the salt and salt your mashed potatoes, but it's not working, what are you going to do? Are you going to keep using it? Are you going to keep it in the pantry? What are you going to do? What did Jesus say? You're going to throw it out. What Jesus says, if you are no longer distinctive or influential, now Jesus is going to be harsh here. There is no way to soften what Jesus is saying. There's no way to take what Jesus is saying and make it pleasant. Jesus says, if as a believer you are no longer distinctive or influential, then you have lost your purpose as a believer. That's why he called you. Salt without saltiness is worthless. A believer who doesn't believe is not fulfilling his purpose or her purpose. A follower of Christ who isn't following. A saint who isn't holy. A disciple who isn't learning. Jesus said, you have no purpose as a believer and you have no future but destruction. Then let's talk about the light of the world for a moment and then we'll make some application. Jesus says, you are the light of the world. What does that mean? Well, I think it means a couple of things. First of all, you are to be conspicuous. You are to be conspicuous. People should know that you are there. People should know that you are a believer. You are to be conspicuous. You cannot. So I'm from Kentucky. In Kentucky, we have Mammoth Cave. We have a whole system of caves in Kentucky. Sometimes they fall through. You get sinkholes. It's a whole thing. But that we've got caves, a lot of caves in Kentucky. And in one of those caves, in one of the tours, they take you in there, underground. You're completely away from the opening. And guess what they do? They turn out the light. Now, how dark do you imagine that is? It's really dark. It's like there is no way to describe it. It is utter, complete blackness. You can't describe how deep the darkness is, and then somebody turns on a light. I imagine a bunch of jokers do it now. People are probably on their phones being knotheads. But back then, before we had phones, it was dark, and somebody would turn on a light. How visible do you think the light was? The darkness was utter, deep, and complete. And somebody turned on a light and you could see where it was. You're not missing that. And as a believer, you're supposed to stand out. You're not supposed to be undercover. You're not supposed to be camouflaged. You're not supposed to be wearing a spirit, so what is it, a ghillie suit? Is that what they call them, where you can hide in the bushes? So, is that true of you? If we were to go around and interview your friends and your coworkers, and by the way, I've done this for several of you, just so you know, I've been calling around people that you know, just so you know this has actually happened, so you can't trick anybody on this one. But if we were to talk to your coworkers, and I'm kidding, I didn't really, people are looking worried, like, did he really do that? I didn't do that. But if we were to ask your friends or your coworkers, and we said, this person, so let's take Ty, right? So we go and talk to Ty's buddies and his co-workers and his schoolmates, all these people, and we talk to them and we say, Ty, let's talk about Ty. Is Ty a secular person or is he a spiritual person? Is he a worldly person or is he spiritual? What would they say? Would Ty have given enough evidence to the people around him that they would be able to say, he's spiritual? Or would they say, I don't know, I have no idea what his condition is? Well, they say, well, he's spiritual. Ty is a spiritual person. Then we say, well, okay, is Ty spiritually, is Ty a dedicated believer to one faith, or is he just generically spiritual? Would he have given enough evidence for somebody to know that he believes in one thing? He said, well, no, I know that Ty is a believer in one thing. He's a dedicated believer. Well, what does he believe? Does he believe just some religion, or is he a Christian specifically? Well, I don't really know. He's never talked about it. He said, well, okay, I know that Ty is a Christian. And so we could say, all right, as a Christian, is Ty a conservative Christian, Bible believer, or is he one of those liberal Christians, not really a Christian? They might say, well, I don't really know. I don't know where he is on that. He said, well, no, I know that Ty is a conservative, Bible-believing Christian. And so we might say, well, is he a Bible quoter, or is he a Bible doer? Is he a Sunday Christian or an everyday Christian? Is he a critic of other people, or does he live out his faith? And in all of those questions, what we're asking is, to people around Ty, has he given enough evidence for people to know who he is? Is he conspicuous? And then light is also to be beneficial. Light is to be beneficial. My family refuses to accept this truth. My family loves to live in darkness. I don't understand it. We've got one tiny little lamp that gives out about half a candle's worth of light. And when it gets dark in the house, they're fine with that. That's all they, just one little tiny flickering, nothing light. They're fine with that. I don't understand that. I came out of darkness. I'm a child of the light. I don't know. I don't know about them. I don't know about their darkness-dwelling selves. But I'm in the light, man, and I want some light. I want the big lamp, right? I want it to shine. I don't like it dark like that. Because light helps me do a lot of things. It helps me avoid injury. I have to trip over things in the darkness. It helps me read my book. It helps Ray work on wood. It helps Teresa quilt. It helps Miss Mary make stick dolls for some unknown reason. It helps people do things. Right? Without light, you don't have any of that. Light brings us benefit. You say, well, I don't turn the light on either. I'm a gamer. And so I love to sit in the dark and eat Cheetos and play my games. That's fine, but you're still able to do that because of what? Because of light, right? Because the TV is making light or whatever you're playing. So light is able to give us blessing. When we talk about people who are not believers, very often we use the term lost. What does that mean? When we talk about people who are unbelievers, very often we use the word lost. What does that mean? Well, it means what lost usually means. They don't know where they are. They don't know where they're supposed to go, and they don't know how to get there, and they need somebody to help them find their way. That's what lost means. And that's what Christians as light are supposed to do. Are you able to do that? I had to do a wedding yesterday, and I thought I knew where the venue was. Now, it was a very casual wedding, and so I could get there like not long before it started. And I thought I knew, Troy, it was Billy Pollock's boy got married over in Indian Beach. And they told me where the venue was, and I thought I knew where it was. And so I left my house in time to get to where I thought it was. But it was at least 20 minutes farther than I thought it was. I was wrong about where it was. Now, thankfully, I made it just under the wire. I mean, it didn't really matter. They couldn't start without me, so it doesn't matter. But imagine if, so thankfully this didn't happen, but imagine if somebody had asked me, hey, where's the Pollock wedding? Where's that wedding at? Can you tell me where it is? What would I have done? I would have given a person who was lost wrong information, and then we both would have been in trouble. So we've got to be sure that we're actually shining the light. The result, when we do that, people are going to notice you. When you do that, people are going to notice you, and it's going to be disruptive. When you are a light, people will notice and it will be disruptive. Sometimes in a good way. They'll start calling you saying, I need some advice. I need your help. I need you to help me figure something out. I'm having a problem and don't know what to do. Sometimes it will be more unpleasant than that. They'll start making fun of you or ostracizing you or firing you. But you will be noticed. But Jesus says that God will be glorified. No matter what happens, God will receive the glory. Well, next week, Lord willing, we're going to continue the series in 1 Peter 1:13 to 16 as Peter talks about the importance of holiness in the midst of corruption. So before we do that, let's just one more time briefly go through what we've talked about this morning, and let's make some very specific application. As we go through, please think about, just use what we're about to do as almost a checklist and say, is that me? Is that where I am? Is that what I'm doing? Am I a believer that God can use? Am I humble? Am I willing to listen to what God says and be led by Him and by those who are leading according to His Word? Am I a peacemaker, or does drama follow me everywhere? Am I a peacemaker, or when things are stirred, I stir them more so? Or am I a peacemaker? Am I a person who says the only thing I want to do is what's right, and even if I have to suffer, I'm going to do it anyway? That's the kind of believer that God can use. Am I kind-hearted toward other people? Am I merciful? Am I courteous? Am I kind? Am I loving? Am I tolerant and patient toward other people? Do I exercise self-control, or do I use the power I have sometimes to damage other people? And then, am I God-minded? Do I think the way that God thinks? Here's what Jesus said: you are the salt of the earth. Are you salty? Now, we don't want to use that the way the young people use it today, right? The youngins today talk about being salty, and they mean that you're a little irritable about something. That something happened, and you don't like it very much, and you're getting a little aggravated. I don't mean that. Are you salty in the sense that Jesus said it? Are you shining? Are you a light who's shining the way that Jesus is talking about? I want you to notice the warning that Jesus is making in each of those, because they're different. When Jesus is talking about saltiness, His warning is, don't regress. He says, you are salt. Don't stop being salt. Don't be tasteless. But with the light, He says, don't retreat, right? With the salt, He says, don't stop being salt. With the light, He says, don't hide it. Don't play small. Don't retreat from shining your light. Is your life distinct from the world? If we were to ask the people around you, what are you spiritually? What would they say? How much would they know about who you are? Do you possess influence for good? Are there people in your circle right now that you can point to and say, that person is different? It may not be in a good way. You may have tried to influence somebody with the gospel. They got angry, lashed out at you, and now they won't talk to you. Well, that's their problem. But you were influential. You did what you were supposed to. Do people see your good works? Do people see good things that you do? That means helping them, but it also means standing up for what's right, even when they don't agree with it. Do people glorify God because of you? These are the questions I think that Jesus would have us to ask. And so what we do about that, take out your songbook, by the way, and we'll sing that song in just a moment. As an invitation song, just a second, we'll be singing that. But I just want to give you a couple of things that you might consider as you think about growing in what Jesus is talking about in Matthew chapter 5. Know your true identity. Know your true identity. Jesus says to His disciples, He did not say, you shine light. He did not say, you taste salty. What He said was, you are salt and you are light. This is who you are. As a believer, it's very common for believers to say, not me, that's not me. I talk to them all the time. Every now and then I see one in the mirror. I hear from believers all the time people saying, that's not me. I'm not light. I'm not salt. I'm not holy. I'm not in a relationship with God. All those things. Know your true identity. Examine your character. Read through the Beatitudes and say, is that me? Examine your influence. Are you an influence on people around you for what you believe? Upgrade your spiritual habits. If, as you think about these things, you realize I'm a little bit deficient in that thing, there's only one thing to do about it, and that is to upgrade your spiritual habits, which have to do with Bible study, prayer, and fellowship. And then finally, make up your mind to stand out and speak up. You will live in fear. You will hide your light. You will neglect to exercise influence until you make up your mind. Until you decide, starting today, I'm going to stand up and speak out for what I believe. Those are the things that we have to do. So Jay announced the song. We're going to sing that in just a moment. I just want to reiterate that in this passage, Jesus is talking to disciples. Jesus is talking to believers in this passage. Were other people listening? Yeah. Other people impacted? Sure. Other people probably became believers because of what Jesus said. But Jesus was talking to believers. If you are not a believer, you are not salt. If you are not a believer, you are not light. You are in darkness. And there's only one way to fix that, and that is to become a Christian. So we'd love to talk to you about that if you're ready to, or you have questions, or however you want to approach that. We're here to talk with you about it. If you are a Christian, and we go through this today, and you say, I need some help with that. I need to do better about that. You might even say, I've worked on that, and I still can't get it right. It's time to get help, and we'd love to help you with that. Whatever the case this morning, as we're singing the song, you decide that you need help, let us know how we can help after church, or you can come forward as we stand and sing the song.